It is time to delve into the history of this weird and wonderful city of ours. Lisa Murray is out this week, but never fear, Dr. Mark Dunn is in. He's a historian, author of a heap of articles on the Dictionary of Sydney, and he's deputy chair of the Heritage Council, so he's very well qualified to be in the hot seat and joins us now. Morning, Mark.
Good morning, Tess.
So what are we having a chat about this week?
Well, I thought this week we might look at Redfern Park.
Okay.
A lot of people might be familiar with Redfern Park, but as you mentioned, I'm on the Heritage Council, and this week the Minister for Heritage announced that Redfern Park would be put on the State Heritage Register, which is sort of the list of the most important places that we consider as historic or significant around the state. And it's very it's a fine achievement, really, for Redfern Park to go on it, because there are parks in Sydney and there are parks in Sydney.
Yeah.
And,
yes.
You know, everyone has their local park and they all love them for various reasons, but some of them do stand out a little bit more prominently in the history of the place than others. And Redfern's a really good example of that. So there's a whole bunch of reasons.
Yeah. And I mean, you walk through it, it seems quite unsuspecting what's been happening there.
It is. It is. So it's a very lovely, what we'd call a Victorian style park. So you've got your sort of big plantings, your big fig trees and your big palm trees, and there's nice sort of crisscrossing paths that are very standard, and there's this fantastic fountain in the middle of it. And these all go towards adding to why it's important. You know, it was actually set out in the 1880s out of a swamp area in Redfern that had been kind of left behind with the development. And the designer went to the Botanic Gardens, which was a bit of a thing in the 1880s, 1890s. So the head of Botanic Gardens, Charles Moore, chose all the plants. So that's why, actually, if you go to many parks in Sydney, you'll notice there are huge fig trees and there are huge palm trees. That's because the head of Botanic Gardens in the 1880s loved them. So every time he picked plants, he picked these trees. So they're a massive, big, fancy trees. The fountain in the middle was donated by a guy called John Baptist, who actually owned a massive nursery in Redfern. So Redfern, before its hip bars and and brand new hamburger joints, was actually known in the 19th century as a place to go to buy your plants, because it had this enormous acreage of nurseries up on the sort of around the Burke Street and top of Redfern area. So you've got all that, all very nice. Then you've got the oval next to it, which has been there from the start. It was a very early cricket oval, and there was Sydney's first bowling green and bowling club that was there for a long time. There was tennis courts. You've got all these sort of layers. But really, its importance in more contemporary Sydney society is its relationship to the Aboriginal community in Redfern. So this was a place from the 1920s, particularly, as more and more Aboriginal families started to move into Redfern to take advantage of the growing opportunities in industry and the railway work and all this sort of stuff. That's why people were coming there. It was a big open space that Aboriginal families felt comfortable meeting at. And over the next 20, 30, 40 years, it became a central part to this Aboriginal community re-establishing itself in Redfern. So in the 1940s, you have the start of the Redfern All Blacks, which is the first Aboriginal, all-Aboriginal rugby league team, which is still going. They play at Redfern Oval. Then, of course, you have South Sydney football team come in the 48, they start playing and make it their home ground, and they, of course, they still train there. And then it also becomes this place, though, where the sort of from the 1950s and 60s, this early ideas of Aboriginal politics starts to brew, if you like. So there's talk there that the first ideas around the Aboriginal Medical Centre and the Aboriginal Legal Service and these things, these sort of cultural and community groups, started to be talked about in the park, and then they went on to be more developed and official, and off they went, and they're still operational around Redfern. There's the Legal Service, the Medical Service and various other ones were the first of the Aboriginal, purely Aboriginal sort of focused community activism, if you like, in the country. But really, the big kickoff comes in 1988. So when we have our bicentenary of the First Fleet or the start of the Invasion Day idea, it's from Aboriginal people that the protests around and sort of the questioning around why we would have that date starts. And Redfern Park is right at the centre of this whole, the germ of the idea of this this sort of protest movement. Because as the bicentennial started to approach, a lot of Aboriginal communities, or probably all of them, realised that they'd been left out of this idea, that there was a sort of a bit of a silence about what that all means for Aboriginal people. And Redfern because it was a Aboriginal community, became this centre of the place where the protest movement started. But as the bicentennial date approached, literally tens of thousands of people started to bus in from all over the country in towards Redfern and to be part of a protest day, an invasion day.
Wow.
And Redfern Park was where they gathered and where they started to organise themselves, to the point when they finally began to march, and they were going to march from Redfern Park first to Hyde Park, and then there was sort of a joint idea, well, no, they should go to the harbour. 20,000 Aboriginal people, they estimated, moved out of Redfern Park on this march. It's the biggest coming together of Aboriginal people ever recorded.
Wow.
And it started in Redfern Park. When they walked up Elizabeth Street, they get to Belmore Park, which is just near Central there. Little did they know that there was about another 20,000 people waiting in the park there for them. And by the time they get down to the harbour and Hyde Park, there's about 40,000 people marching against Invasion Day, which is, funnily enough, even now, sort of...
still sort of a, well, a topic.
It's a very raw topic, but also people have kind of forgotten that there were that many people.
I hadn't realised that to begin with, that there had been those marches.
No, and there's a fascinating and fantastic documentary that shows the march and the protest around it. And the Dictionary Sydney's got a link to that on their Redfern Park site. But of course, the other thing was, it's the place where Paul Keating makes his famous Redfern speech in 1992, where it's the first time a Prime Minister, in fact, the first time really any political leader, had stood up and acknowledged that the white Australia had something to answer to, that, you know, we were the ones that took the children away, we were the ones that did the murder, we were the ones who brought in the alcohol. You know, it was a problem or something that white Australia had to face up to. And I mean, in 1992, and he did that in Redfern Park, and it's quite a fascinating thing if you watch that speech, because when he starts talking, as most politicians and particularly, you know, people are watching going, oh, here we go, he's just pushing his own barrow, and the crowd is kind of not listening, and then as it goes on, you can see they start to listen and go, oh, hang on a minute, this is something pretty extraordinary. And of course, it changes the way that the discussion around Aboriginal Australia in politics is had. And it really is the first point where, the discussion moves. It lays the groundwork for later things like Kevin Rudd's apology. It's just come after Mabo and Native Title. So it's this massive turning point in Redfern Park. And it's the park was chosen symbolically because it's the sort of centre of Redfern, centre of Aboriginal community. And, yeah, it changed the way Australia really thought about itself.
So what does it mean for the park itself that it has been put or will be put onto the State Heritage Register?
Well, there's a couple of things. What it means physically for the park is not a great deal, really. There are, if you get on the heritage list, there are potentially certain, not so much restrictions, but if something's going to change in a major way in the park, like, for example, if someone wanted to build something in the park, you can't just go ahead and build it. You do have to go through advice and get some ideas and et cetera. But what it really does is it gives it a recognition that it's an important part of the state story. So it takes it from being just a thing about a local park that everyone likes and sits in and has their lunch to being part of a broader story about why something is important for the whole state. Now, that's very difficult for a park, obviously, because most parks are not known by the entire state. But we think that Redfern Park, for all these reasons, not just because it's a nice example of a Victorian park that happens to remain, but because it's got South Sydney Rabbitohs and the All Blacks, but all this Aboriginal undercurrent and all this story and tradition and connection, that in fact it's an important thing for everyone in the state to know about Redfern Park.
Mark, thanks so much for swinging by.
Not at all, Tess. Go up to the park. It's fantastic.
Spend the day there. There you go. Go spend your lunch in Redfern Park. Dr. Mark Dunn there, running you through Dictionary of Sydney for the week, having a chat about Redfern Park and Oval. So this week, the Minister for Environment and Heritage announced it's going to be included on the State Heritage Register, which is very exciting.